Tuesday night. What they got here.
Okay.
Got to put you into the books. Yeah.
History. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful to be here with you guys. I'm really grateful to be here with you guys. I've been, as a lot of you know, can you all hear me in the back there? Good. Okay. What? As a lot of you, or some of you know, I've been away on vacation ever since I did the, I guess I finished off the steps over there, and then I hopped on a something. I went somewhere. I was on a mountaintop in North Carolina with four of my kids, some son-in-laws, and four of my grandkids, and for 2 weeks, and then I flew over to Alaska for a couple of weeks. So this is my first, I guess, commitment since coming back from Alaska, which was on the red eye on Friday night. So it's good to be here. And I figure I got nothing much to talk about. I'm pretty boring, and I got a pretty boring life. So I figure I'll just talk about my vacation. What? Talking to the mic? Okay. Okay. I'll talk. Lift it up. Okay. Is that okay? Okay. Aim to please. You know. So, you know, listen, I guess I ought to talk a little bit about drinking or something. Yeah, you think? You know, I mean, well, I want you to know I came in when I was 31 years old because I had this problem. I couldn't stop drinking. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So I don't really have to explain that. I mean, really, do I have to explain that? I couldn't stop drinking. You ever get to a point where you can't stop drinking? You know, you're drinking against your will. You wake up and you announce, I'm not going to have a drink today, and by 5 o'clock you're drunk. You wake up and say, I'm not going to the bar today, and by 5 o'clock you're at the bar. You wake up and you say, I'm not going to, you know, buy alcohol, and then by 5 o'clock you're searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters, so you're broke because you maxed up all the credit cards, and instead of drinking champagne or whatever, scotch or, you know, whatever it is in the bars, now you're buying $2.89 Carlos Rossi Chianti and drinking it by an LP record, listening to the same track over and over again, like A Pirate Looks at 40, or You're Running on Empty, or I'm Mr. Blue, or Only the Lonely, or Rainy Days and Mondays, all those good Alkie songs, thinking about all those good-looking gals that turned you down, and you know, thinking about your funeral and how they're all there, and feeling sorry for the way they treated you, and you're a trial attorney, and you're 31 years old, and things aren't going so good, so... And so that's sort of like the drinking deal. That was my wonderful drinking deal. I was going to be the Hugh Hefner of Miami. I left a beautiful wife, a beautiful child, a beautiful house. Just stuff. But, I mean, the kid wasn't stuff. The wife wasn't stuff. You know, ripping people's hearts out and disappointing them, acting selfishly because all you want is what you want to make yourself happy and chasing skirts all over the place and all that sort of bullshit crap that guys get involved in between the ages of 18 and 67. Thinking that if they could only take some Viagra and get a hard-on for 4 hours, that's going to be the solution to their problems. You know, or a breast implant, or whatever the hell we got to do, all that vanity horse shit that they talk about in Ecclesiastes, vanity, vanity, it's all vanity, a new car, a new blouse, a new this, a new that. Somehow that's going to change the putrid kind of bullshit person you are and make you feel good about yourself, maybe for 3 or 4 seconds like Scotch did, but I'm trying to keep this light. You're laughing, James. You don't know what it's like. So that's pretty much, you know, have I sort of like described a little bit about what alcoholism is all about? It's sort of like, well, you know what I'm talking about. You've got your brain, and you know what the deal is. Crummy way to live your life. And, of course, you don't even know you have a first step in getting out of, you know, get jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. And, of course, I didn't. It takes a long time, many, many years, hurting a lot of people, doing a lot of stuff to even realize you have a drinking problem. And, of course, drinking isn't even the problem. That's, you know, you don't get that drinking thing, but I've recovered from that. I have recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And although this may be hard to explain, except for people who have done the steps, even though I've recovered, I don't plan on drinking, I don't want to drink, it's been lifted from me, there's no doubt in my mind within an hour I could be drunk. Because I'm an alcoholic, I have no power over that. My power, any power I have about anything in my life, comes from the God of my understanding. You know, and like Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. So that's the only thing I talk about. I just talk about God. So somewhere along the line, in the next 30, 40, 50, well, 3 hours, I'll be talking about God. And how he fits into my life? No, how much he is my life. It is my life. And the only hope I have is by somehow sharing, somebody will understand that that's the answer to the whole thing, because that's what AA is all about. It's all about finding a relationship with God. That's why the last line in AA is, see to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That's why it says in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, if we're sincere about this decision, and that's this decision that we're not God, we got to stop playing God. If we're sincere about the decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he's not the higher power, he's the highest power. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his works well. We lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter, we're reborn. That's why it says in the big book, and there is a solution. Things like, we've experienced much of heaven, we've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, which you've not even dreamed. The great fact is this and nothing less, that God has transformed our life, changed our life, and he's become the central factor in our life. That's why between 1935 and 1939, the books that the founders found absolutely essential was 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, and the Sermon on the Mount. That's why they were profoundly and totally involved in Bible study, and that's all they did. Studying books that were about the Bible. And that's why when they said in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, written in 1939, after 4 years they were sober, they said, rarely have we seen a person feel as thoroughly off followed our path. And their path had nothing to do with reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am a big book aficionado. I'm not putting down the big book. But after 15 years of recovery and seeing how some people with 15 years and 20 years and stuff like that were still thumb-sucking crybabies, worrying about people, places, and things, and getting laid, and all sorts of bullshit that never helped me, except that I hurt myself and other people, I decided I wanted to be like the few people I did see in AA that really looked like real men, which is what the sixth step is all about. It separates the men from the boys, because apparently there's a separation. Apparently there's a lot of boys in AA and very few men. A lot of women, a lot of girls, and very few women. And so I decided I made my choice, because it's a program of attraction rather than promotion, and I was attracted to the non-bullshit. And I was full of shit, and I'm still full of shit, but you know what I mean? I'm doing the best I can, and believe me, anything you see in me that looks any way desirable or that you like has nothing to do with me, because if you knew me and if it was me up here talking, you wouldn't want what I had, because I didn't want what I had. You know, whatever you see in me that's in any way attractive is a reflection of him. You know, and when I focus on him, when I talk to people who are focused on him, and when I pray to him, and when my mind is on him, I'm just a better person. I feel good about myself. And so I'm going to talk about my vacation, because my vacation is something I just came from. It does have something to do with alcoholism, because I was there. You know, and believe me, if you're there, then whatever you're doing, if you run the grocery store, it has something to do with alcoholism, because you're there, you know, it's your life. And you know, when alcoholics take vacation, I was talking outside of this, when alcoholics take vacation, it's different than when regular people take vacations. Because when regular people take vacations, they just go on vacation. But when alcoholics take vacation, like me, I always take my brain with me. And that's the problem, because what happens is after I stopped drinking, you know, when old-timers talk about sobriety, they mean more than just not drinking. And Bill Wilson said later on in 1958 or something like that, he wrote an essay, it's a wonderful essay, called The Next Frontier, Emotional Sobriety. What he said in the essay, he says, the real problem with alcoholics, one of the real problems with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. Unhealthy dependency, things that we're dependent upon that we don't even know we're dependent upon. We don't even, because the alcoholic life, what does it say? It says men and women they drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, they are irritable, they are discontented. That's the way we are sober. That's sobriety for us. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So the problem actually precedes the drink. The problem is having to be with restless, irritable, discontent. Most of the time we don't even know. And it says the alcoholic life seems the only normal one, which means to be restless, irritable, discontent, to be ill at ease, to be comparing your inside with other people's outsides, to feel like a phony or you're not good enough, to hate yourself and not even knowing you're hating yourself. You don't even know you hate yourself. All you know is once in a while you're lathering up in the shower and some boy says you're a piece of shit. And you turn around and there's nobody there but you. You know what I mean? And, you know, it doesn't come from Mars. It doesn't come from Venus. It comes from inside you. It's you and your reputation of you with you. When you run those tapes, they tell you you're no good, you'll never be okay, and everything. You know what that's? That's you telling you how you feel about you. And it's coming from somewhere. And no amount of booze, and you know, the only thing alcohol, I didn't even suffer from alcoholism when I was drinking, because I used alcohol to chase away the ism. That's why I'm an alcoholic, because no woman, no suit of clothes, no car, No amount of money, no nothing ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks, and that's why I drank it. And if alcohol did for me what it did for me, if alcohol worked for me today the way it worked for me 32 years ago, I'd still be drinking it. The sad part about my life is alcohol doesn't work for me the way it worked for me about 32 years ago. And the real sad part about my life is alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And I hurt a lot of people, and I hurt myself, and I didn't even know it. And so I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stop drinking. And what the, you know, I talk about alcoholism, not the drinking, not even being part of the disease, because when the disease of alcoholism reared its ugly head, and it was 20 miles down the road, it was 5 weeks away, it was wherever it was, before it would get to me, I would say something like, I need a drink. You know, because if you're an alcoholic, you hate yourself, you hate your life, you hate, it's all about the corrosive threat of fear. It's all about fear, what's going to happen to me? And in order to make sure, it's all about not being, protecting yourself and not being hurt. Just not being hurt. I just don't want to be hurt. I just want to win. So if you're not going to be hurt, that means you got to control. That means you got to control people. You got to control outcomes. That means you got to know outcomes. You can't deal with uncertainty. You got to know what's going to happen. You got to push people. You got to tell them, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You got to tell me. You got to push them. You got to yell at them. You got to scream. You got to do whatever you got to do in order to control the deal, control the person, control the wife, control the girlfriend, control the boss, control the situation, because you have to have control. Because if you don't have control, something bad's going to happen to you, and you don't even know what's going to happen to you, but you know you're scared. You don't even, as a matter of fact, you don't even know you're scared. This is just the way you are. And somehow deep down inside, you know, you sort of know, because the world has so many frippin' moving parts. You know what I mean? And it's all filled with all sorts of people that don't seem to agree on how to do things, you know, like the way you do, and they say misbehave all the time. You have the sneaking suspicion that you're really not in control. And so you're scared. And so if you're an alcoholic, you got to be in control. You got to have the last word. You got to be in arguments with people. You got to have grudges. You got to have, you know, as I said, the last word. You're always going to be in conflict with somebody. And everything's got to go your way, or else things are going to be terrible, and there's always something to complain about, and everything's shit. And what I used to do, I used to solve that alcoholism problem, I didn't know it was alcoholism, it's just the way I am. Because when you're naturally like that, when that's the natural way you're thinking, you don't know you have a problem, because that's the way you are. And if you're an alcoholic like me, you hang around with other guys that are alcoholics, and they drink like you, and they think like you. So if you say, so it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and your wife and kid is at home, and you say, my wife's a bitch, she doesn't understand me, the guy next to you says, yeah, mine too. And so you don't think there's anything wrong with you, because you take a poll of everybody that you hang out with, and they think exactly the way you do. You know, how are you saying I'm crazy? All my friends think exactly the way I do. Every once in a while, you run into a guy, and he says something like, you know, Russ, you're 31 years old. You got a wife, you got a kid. You know, why do you stop playing games? Why don't you just grow the hell up and be home? What are you sitting in a bar for at 11 o'clock at night? But who the hell's good? But he's full of shit. He's like everybody. Everybody's full of shit. He's full of shit. You're full of shit. They're full of shit. I'm full of shit. You don't need to take any of that stuff seriously. Because the thing you value most is your opinion, because you're God. Because you're the center of the universe. Because you're right and you know everything. When you know everything, why do you have to listen to anybody else? And so here's my suggestion. I don't want to put anything down, but really when you have the thought process like that, and that's the way it is, number one, you tend to be uncomfortable in your own skin. And number two, bad things start happening to you. They do. They just do. It's not a good way to live your life. Of course, you don't know that. You think you're a creature of bad breaks and misunderstandings. But the greatest thing that happened, so that's the deal. What happens is, you know, I drank really to chase the alcoholism away. I said, that's what alcoholism is. It's like Novocaine. It's like, you know what it really is? It's a way of committing suicide. I had a friend who was an alcoholic, stopped going to meetings. He's committed suicide this weekend. Sad situation. But, you know, what it really is, it's a way of killing yourself without and still breathing. You know, if you think about it, you know, you want to get off the planet, you want to get away, you want to stop worrying, you want to stop being, you know, and I could whack this stuff down and die for about 6 or 7 hours and then wake up again the next morning. It's, you know, I guess that's why when alcoholics, at least when this alcoholic stopped drinking, I think about killing myself a lot. I wouldn't think about drinking. I think about putting a gun in my mouth. I think about putting a gun in my head. I'm not saying I would do it, but I think a lot. I wouldn't think about drinking, but I think about committing suicide. I think about jumping off the ledge. I think about doing something, anything to get away from the horse shit. Of course, there was no horse shit. It was just my brain. You know, so how do you, so you stop drinking. How do you deal with that crap? How are you going to deal with those voices, the 50 voices telling you, you know, how are you going to deal with that one voice that says you're the greatest thing in the world, you're special, nothing will ever happen to you, you're going to be in charge, you're fantastic, they just don't understand, and that other voice that says you're a piece of shit, which sets off some sort of, I don't know, some sort of friction, I don't know, some sort of deal. Not really a good thing. That's why you can only talk about this stuff at Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, because they really don't understand it at the Kiwanis Club. You know what I mean? And you think you're unique. That's the only thing. Isn't that true? You think, well, what's the use of talking? You're all alone. You are alone. I'm not talking about like alone in a room. I'm talking like in beyond Venus. I'm the Alpha Centauri, you know? You are so alone because you can't touch anybody. You can't get, because they'll never, how could they ever understand? Because you're so unique. It's impossible to explain it. And so you come in there, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you put the plug in the jug, and initially you feel good and all that sort of crap and everything like that, and everything's wonderful, and then all of a sudden, you hang around for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and you start thinking again. And then there's no fear like alcoholic fear when you're not drinking. At least when you're drinking, you can numb the pain. You know, of course, that's what happened at the end for me. The drinking no longer numbed the pain. But I'll tell you something, to be at 3 o'clock in the morning to worry about the money and to worry about the wife and to worry about the cancer and to worry about the this and to worry about the that and what's going to happen and do the same worry. Man, you go to sleep worrying about it. You wake up worrying about it. You go through the whole day worrying about it. You say things to yourself like, I got to stop thinking about this. And then what you do is you keep on thinking about it. You know what I mean? You can stop the drinking. You can stop the drinking, but how do you stop the thinking? You can't stop the thinking. You know, you're upset, and that's the real alcoholism, which centers in our mind, not our body. How do you get rid of that stuff? How are you going to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, experiencing much of heaven? How are you going to do that thing? How do you even know that kind of life exists when 80% of the people in AA are thumb-sucking crybabies anyway? I mean, we're not exactly talking about Well People's Anonymous here. It's all about my mother, my father, my sister, my aunt, the car, the money, the horse shit. Listen, I'm not putting AA down or anything. That's what it is. That's what we are. We're problem people. We're sick. We're crazy and everything like that. And every once in a while, one out of 200 or one out of 300 make it to 25 years. And every once in a while, one of those guys actually find an answer and actually do what they were talking about in the big book and focus on that deal and somehow break that alcoholic escape velocity with and break the binds of the gravitational pull of alcoholism. So they really have been rocking in the fourth dimension, and that's the stuff I was interested in. I was interested in those guys. So I was, a lot of you guys have heard this is going to key into something that happened on my vacation. I was I was 3 months sober. You know, there's a, I went to a non-AA event, and I heard somebody say this statement that's been with me ever since, and I believe it's true based upon my experience in AA. And he said, the person you'll be in the next 5 years will depend on the people you hang out with and the books you read. And I later realized that the books I read really depends upon who I hang out with. You know, they tell me it's my sponsors. It's the people I say, read this book, read that. The things I do, you know, the conversations I have depends upon who I hang out with. What I focus on, what I'm talking about has to do with, you know, you put me with a group of Ku Klux Klanners, racists, I become a racist. I'm an alcoholic. You put me in a group of communists, I'm a communist. You put me in a group of Republicans, I'm a Republican. You put me in a group of guys that want to talk about getting laid and pornography and everything like that. That's my deal. That's my focus. I am driving in the car, and the only thing that's on my mind is the last person I had a conversation with and what we were talking about. If it's about sports, it's about sports. If it's about material things, it's about money. It's about look at that car he got, the money he got. You know, look how thin she is. Look at the whatever they're talking about. That's what I'm thinking about. And 95% of the stuff I'm thinking about is horseshit stuff that's designed to kill me. Because the world, although it's beautiful, let me tell you something. It is actually designed to kill your ass. I know who's in charge of this world. That's a whole other story. It's not designed to help you stay sober. Just go out there and look at the billboards. Just look at every billboard you see. You know what's designed to tell you? You know what every billboard you see tells you? Buy this or you're a piece of shit. Buy this or you're a piece of shit. Oh, you think that car's nice? Look at this one we got up here. Your car's already 1 year old. You're a piece of shit. You know what I mean? Look at this watch. You're a piece of crap. You turn on a TV. You know what the TV tells you? You're a piece of shit. And you know, all the people on TV, even the newscasters, look like they just walked out, and they did. They spend hours and hours making them up. They get the best looking guys, the best jeans. They make them up. They make them pretty. And they put them up there. And all you see on TV is people that say, man, everybody on TV looks better than me. Because they spent weeks putting them that way. You know what I mean? And you know they're not doing well because all those people are committing suicide and doing crazy things too. And in between those little images you get like the TV commercials. Have Viagra, have this, have that. Because you're a piece of crap and you're a piece of, you know, you got this problem unless you pop this or do that. No. And you go to 1 hour AA meeting a day, and you watch that shit 8 hours, you're being pummeled with all those things, and everybody else in the world is being pummeled by those things, and you think you're like safe. And then you go to the movies and you see like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, and they're after 15,000 takes, they look like gods, you know what I mean? Their lives could be messed up like hell, but you know something, they go to all sorts of takes, everything they say is scripted for me, everything, they look so cool, so perfect, so everything, and that's it, and that's what we just feed on that horseshit and walk around thinking what piece of shit we are, and no wonder, because nobody's telling us how incredibly wonderful we are and how incredible life is, because it's not about God out there. It's about you getting better, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. It's about what a piece of crap you are. Do this or do that so you can be better, and not realizing that you got everything you need right here, right now. It's a deal, I'll tell you what. And you know something, you try to sell this crap, you try to sell the religious stuff and the biblical stuff and the spiritual stuff out there on the street, and they'll laugh at you and they'll beat you up, because the road to salvation is narrow and the broad highway leads to death, and many go there. And even in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is really all about God and finding a relationship with God, you know, don't let any man say wife or no wife, job or no wife, nonsense. It's all about your relationship with God. See, your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. But you even sell that in AA, and even AA, even if you listen to the, quote, wisdom of the groups instead of what the actual program is about, you'll have people walking out and say, I don't want to hear that crap. I want to hear about the psychological crap and all the stuff that never helped you when you're out there. So I go to this meeting when I'm 3 months sober, and does any of this stuff make any sense? Yeah, isn't that a killer? How many meetings you got to go to until you hear something that makes sense? Hear the truth. But people are hungry for the truth. They're not hungry for the bullshit. They're not hungry for the problems. They don't want to hear any more problems or whining or thumb-sucking crybabies. What people want, what I found throughout the United States, is people will always listen to the truth, because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a solution that has weight and depth, that's different than that they've heard before, the same old crap they heard before that never worked. Not something that just sort of tickles them in their ears and make themselves feel better, something that they know is true, is legitimate and true, because it really takes real serious change to do that deal and to change that focus. But most people think it's crap unless they see it working in other people. So I was 3 months sober, and I went to... My first sponsor took me to an AA meeting, and keynote group. And there was a guy speaking, you know, I'd never seen him before. Well, I only had 3 months. His name was Al Kennedy. I tell this story. It's an important story in my life. You know what happens in your life? I don't know about you, but what's happened to me in AA, and, you know, I've had 32 years of this deal, is you're going along, and all of a sudden you bump into somebody. If you continue walking in the direction you're walking, you're going to wind up where you're headed, right? But, you know, if you're going to change direction, you got to somehow change direction. And alcoholics don't change direction unless the judge or the, you know, something's got to happen to make an alcoholic change direction. Even if it's, and the things that make alcoholics alive, make alcoholics is people. And I bumped into this, so I met this guy, and you bump into a person, and next thing you know, you're walking this way, next thing you know, you're walking that way. There's just somebody, you're just walking that way. And when you're walking that, you bump to it, and you're walking that way. And it's whether you're open. And I don't know how this deal happens. You know, it's like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. But I don't know how this deal happens. But somehow, some way, some people hear or bump into people, and they, you know, like it says about, let he who has ears hear. Some people hear the mess. They hear something. And it changes their life. They go to one meeting, and it changes their life. You know what I mean? They get a new vision. They get a new deal. You know what I mean? And some people go to the same meeting, and they hear absolutely nothing. I don't know. I'm not in charge of that. God's in charge of that deal. You know? And so I went to this meeting. I was 3 months sober, and all I knew about not drinking, I wasn't drinking, I didn't want to drink, and all that sort of stuff. And you know, when you first go to AA, I don't know about you, but when I first started going to AA, during the first 3 months where it was all about the booze and am I going to drink or not drink and all that sort of stuff, I swear to God, they weren't talking about God. All they were talking about was drinking or not drinking. One day, I stopped worrying about drinking or not drinking, and I heard somebody mention God. All of a sudden, they started talking about it. Like the whole AA program surrounds me, you know what I mean? They changed it based upon that you hear what you want to hear. You know, if there's 150 people in here, you know, there's 150 messages going on. One guy comes up and says, I really appreciate when you said that. Another gal says, I really appreciate when you said that. They're whole completely different things, and half the time they're not even the things I said. It's what's going on inside of you, what you hear, what God allows you to hear. You know, I'm just up there doing my thing, doing what the Lord tells me to do. So, what's the deal? So, I go to this meeting, and I'm sitting there, and it's all about the booze, right? And this guy named Al Kennedy starts talking. He had about 30 years plus. He was an old-timer. And something about him, you know. And, you know, I'm like one of the, you know. Listen, I've been a trial attorney for 35 years, former division chief for the state attorney's office, trying murder cases, all that sort of stuff. So I'm used to getting up and, you know, doing the deal, you know, with the mouth. But I was never used to. But all my stuff is always scripted. There's always somebody else who's facing the death penalty. Or something. I'm an advocate. Nothing bad's going to happen to me. You know what I mean? And it's not about me. It's about him. It's about the evidence. And there's the judge and the jury. And so I'm sort of used to it. But I'll tell you what I'm not used to. I'm not used to talking extemporaneously for an hour about what's going on in my heart and what's going on in my brain. I don't understand that deal. I'm sitting here in the audience, you know. And there are people, I'm watching people who are like, you know, plumbers, you know, and, you know, the guys that didn't even graduate grade school, you know what I mean? And they're talking for an hour about themselves and how they feel. And what's even worse is, like, I'm understanding everything they're saying. And I'm going, how can this guy do that without notes? You know what I mean? I could never do that. That's why people want to ask, well, you want to do the meeting? I'm not ready. What is I not ready? I mean, it's alcohol code for I'm scared. They're going to judge me. They're not going to like me. Something terrible's going to happen. Because if you're an alcoholic, you're going to please love me a holic. I got to belong a holic. Don't reject me a holic. I'll prostitute myself, do anything as long as you accept me a holic. You know, I mean, that's what we're followers. We're not leaders. You know, I'm going to do whatever they, you know, and believe me, in Key West, I'm drinking margaritas. In a country western bar, I'm drinking beer. In Manhattan, I'm drinking martinis. I never get them mixed up. I never go into a country western bar and say, give me a margarita. It's always the beer. I'm always going to do what the men are doing. With, you know, if I'm going to cocaine, I'm doing the cocaine. I'm doing the marijuana. I'm doing whatever I have to do in order to get along and have you like me. Because I don't even know who I am. How do I know who I am? I don't know. I'm whoever I'm with. I have no sense of myself or what's going on or how I think or why I think or why I do. You know, and I'm trying to live my life and act like an adult and a grown-up. I don't even know what a grown-up is, except it's all those other people that look grown-up, and I sure don't feel grown-up. I feel like somebody's going to find out one day what the deal is. So I come in here, and every once in a while, and grown-up, I don't know about you, but grown-ups scare me. They scare me. You know, serious people. So I come in here, and there's Al Kennedy, and he starts talking from the mic, and, you know, talking about himself and talking about his life and just simple stuff, you know. And you could tell by looking at him, he was comfortable in his skin. I mean, how do you do that? You know, he's comfortable. He's just talking non-scripted, comfortable in his skin. God feels, you know, so, you know, he gave you a sense. When you're dealing with somebody who's not scared, who's not afraid, when you're dealing with somebody who is not judging themselves all the time, not comparing their insides with other people's outsides, when you're dealing with yourself that is not thinking the way I always think, what happens is it makes you feel comfortable. You sort of feel like if I can only hang out with this guy, Maybe I'd be okay. You know, this guy, I want to hang out with this guy. I got to find out, how does he do that? You know, how that kind of deal. And he was like one of those guys that I felt like you would feel with a sponsor or something like that. I'd like to have what he had. I didn't even know what he had, but I knew I met him in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was talking from the podium. That's all I knew. Some guy in Alcoholics Anonymous talking from the podium had 30-something years, and he was different. I mean, there's sobriety. I know we're all sober. There's sobriety and there's sobriety, but this was something different. You know, there's like Tiger Woods plays golf and I play golf, but we're playing a different game. You know, he was playing the Tiger Woods game. You know what I mean? And what happened is after the meeting ended and he left. So I turned to my sponsor. I said, man, he was great. I really like that guy. I'd like to hang out with him or stuff like that. And then he says to me this. This is what my sponsor says. This is 32 years ago. I was 3 months sober. My sponsor says this to me. I'll never forget. That's the impression it made on me. He said, well, you know, he's dying. That's exactly what he said. You know, he's dying. So, like I almost didn't hear it. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I go to meetings, I complain, I have a hangnail. You know what I mean? Because he never mentioned anything about dying. I say to him, no, I'm talking about the guy who just shared the meeting. He says, yeah, Al Kennedy, he's dying. I said, no. guy can't be dying. He was just sharing the meeting. He didn't say anything about dying. You know, you ever hear anybody complain at an AA meeting? You ever hear anybody complain about problems at an AA meeting? You ever hear anybody say, anybody have a burning desire? You ever hear his hand shoot up? Ever hear a burning desire in an AA meeting? I mean, when you go to an AA meeting, that's all you hear about. You know, every once in a while, somebody says something you say, and it's not a complaint, it's not a worry, it's not a fear, it's like right on. And you say, where did that guy come from? It's usually a guy with a lot of time. You know, not always. Usually a guy with a lot of time. Everybody else is problem, 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 problem. Poor me, poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. It's all about me and self-pity and all that sort of stuff. And every once in a while, you get to the real deal. The real deal, the genuine article, you know, if they get a chance to talk, you know. So the bottom line is this guy was the genuine article, and I'd never seen anything like Never seen anything like that before. Even in the bars when I used to drink, or even on the outside, even in the world, I had never experienced anything. I'd never experienced somebody who wasn't complaining when they had something to complain, wasn't crying. It was either, I'm in charge, I won, I got the money, or I'm going to die. I mean, it was all about me or money or that. It was all about complaints or bragging or something. I never met somebody who was like him, whatever he was, whatever that is. I don't know what that is. What is that? When you're going through life and stuff are happening to you, and it was almost like whatever was happening to him in his life didn't affect him. Do you understand what I'm saying? Can you imagine what it would be like if everything that happened in your life just didn't affect you? You could probably stay married for a long time. Don't you think? You know, who I am and what I am and how I feel myself doesn't depend at all upon how my wife feels when she wakes up in the morning. Do you know how important that is? You know how many fights you avoid when people wake up and they're feeling bad about stuff and there's stuff going on in their life and they're crazy and they're nuts and everything like that, and you're the biggest guy in the room and you're the only guy in the room? And, you know, and if you're a wife, you know, and things aren't going so good, you know it's you know whose fault it is. You know, my wife's an Al-Anon. Our lady's a perpetual revenge. You know, she does an Al-Anon test step. When I'm wrong, she promptly admits it, you know. You know how it's great, you know how to not have it affect you so you have to say the last word or get into a fight and just say, you know, you're right. I'm guilty. What's the fine? Let's skip the trial. I'll plead guilty, you know. You know, you're the worst husband in the world. Bingo. That's me. Number one worst husband in the world. You know, it's going to cost me an expensive blouse or something. That's going to cost me something. I don't know. Whatever. Stay sober for 30 years or so, you know. 35 years, 32 years. So in any event, so Al Kennedy, and if you can't figure that out, and if you're an alcoholic, you'll never figure that deal out. You'll never be able to have a long-term marriage. You'll never have a long-term relationship with anybody. And even if you do, you'll be miserable. And all you'll be talking is about how shitty your wife is or how shitty your husband is, or you'll feel sorry for yourself because you'll never be able to separate your emotions and yourself from the other person. And everything that's going wrong in your life and everything you feel bad about, you'll be blaming them because you'll know it's their fault because you don't know how to separate you from them. You know, so that's just, forget all that. Don't even listen to that. So he says he's dying. I said, he's dying. I couldn't wrap my brain around that. I couldn't wrap my brain around that deal. And 6 months later, Al Kennedy was dead. 6 months later, Al Kennedy was dead. And you know what it gave me? It really gave me a different vision of what the disease of alcoholism was all about. Because for the first 10 or 15 years, and I hit this thing pretty hard, and I still hit it pretty hard, as far as commitments and meetings and steps and all that sort of stuff. But without any question, within the first 10 or 15 or 20 years, it was hand-to-hand combat in the world. You know that God and mammon thing? You know, I want to believe in God. I want to have a relationship with God. I want to be able to detach. But how am I going to pay the frickin' rent? You know what I mean? I'm going to die out here. You know what I mean? You know, I want to believe in the Lord. I want to go to church. I want to do this. I want to be able to have that. But, you know, what am I going to do about the money? About the IRS? What about this thing? How do you be in the world but not of the world? How do you negotiate around all the pitfalls and everything in the world and be this and somehow not have it affect you so you want to blow your brains? How do you do that deal? And that takes about 15, 20 years of hard work focusing on one thing. And it's the only thing the big book talks about. It's talking about a relationship with God. Because if you focus on him, it all works out. Because he's in charge anyway. It's going to happen the way it's going to happen for the most part anyway. You know, but that's so hard to explain to people. Because they, you know, because they're so scared. They got to kill. They got to do. They got to read. They got to be in charge. You know, and they don't even know that. Nobody here even knows whether they're going to make it home tonight and not have a heart attack. Not drop dead like that. You think you're like in charge. You're in charge of nada. Nada. Cancer is a good thing. You ought to try it sometime. I've had it twice. You ought to try it. It really focuses you on what you're in charge of and what you're not in charge of and what you have control of and what you don't have control of, you know, and how important things are and how unimportant things are and some important stuff. You know, having cancer and knowing that you're going to die or that you may die or going to the operating room is a great lesson for alcoholics if your mind is set right as to powerlessness and what's important, what's not important, and how bullshit you really are and where your sobriety really is. You know, so I'm not going to pray that you all get cancer, but it's actually not a bad thing. Don't think of it as a bad. Don't think of these problems as bad things, because, like the Book of James says, which is what our group was, our AA was built upon. That's why we're almost called the James Gang. It says, "Rejoice when you have trials." See, alcoholics suck their thumb and they cry and they whine when they have trials. Rejoice when they have trials, because when you persevere through these trials by looking at God, your faith grows, and as your faith grows in God, and you start looking at God, you stop looking at the problems. Because why should you look at the problems when you believe in God and God loves you, and whatever problem He brings you through, whatever problem He gives you, okay? Even if it doesn't work out your way, you're going to be a better person. It's going to work out for you anyway after that. And if you believe that, then the bottom line is, you know, it's never a bad day. It's always good stuff. So in any event, all I know is I saw this in Al Kennedy. I've seen a lot of guys like Al Kennedy. And I've seen many, many more guys not like Al Kennedy. And I decided I wanted what Al Kennedy had. I didn't want what all those other people had in AA, you know, that used this sort of like as group therapy. Came here whining, crying about the relationships, whining and crying about the, the only relationship that we're about in here is a relationship with God. So your relationship with Him is right, and your relationship with others will be right. You know, it's all about a relationship with God. That's the only relationship. You have a meeting on relationships, they want to talk about sex, they want to talk about romance. You know what the 12 steps say about romance? They says, yeah, we want to talk about romance. Never was there was a worse thing to think about and talk about. My wife is turning right now, going crazy as she's watching her Venezuelan novellas. At home, because it's all about the romance and the cars and the money and the things and everything like that. And our program says, forget all that stuff. It's going to kill you. It's hard to do that when you got all those billboards out there. So in any event, what happened is I see guys like Al Kennedy. I may not understand an Al Kennedy. I may not understand how you get to be an Al Kennedy. But you know what? I can see that there exists such an animal as a man who's dying of cancer. And somehow, some way, it didn't affect him, and he was up at a podium trying to help other alcoholics. And he was more concerned. I can see that actually exists. That it's not bullshit. That actually exists. And so after I was on the mountaintop in this beautiful cabin in North Carolina, and you know, I this is the truth. You know, I was talking to somebody. Well, it's my truth. You know, I may not. You know, listen. I am grateful that I was able to take the vacation. I was able to have a lot of my grandkids up there. I wasn't able to have all of them, but they're all over the place, and I have a lot of my kids, and have them up there, and we had this gorgeous cabin up on top of a mountain. The only thing, it's nothing for miles around, and I'm grateful I was able to do that. But you know, it's all about, but I was telling somebody, and I can't explain it, I said, the greatest vacation I have is right here with you guys. I don't need that deal. You understand what I'm saying? As a matter, I just don't need that deal. You know, the truth of the matter is, it's nice to be there. It's nice to look at that. I took all the pictures. I sent them all on Facebook, and I sent them all and everything because I have relationships, you know, and I want people, other people. But the point is, a mountain isn't going to keep me sober. A new car isn't going to keep me sober. You know, the Mediterranean Sea is not going to. Here's the deal. You're sitting up there on the mountain. You know, I'm a guy who has relationships with sponsees, with grand sponsees, with a sponsor, with people. I go to church, you know, like it's endorsed in our book. You know, it says in family afterwards and everything, we encourage church. I go to church. I have a church family now. You don't have to have a chip in your pocket to be my friend. You know, I'm involved with those people because you know, some they're focused on the same thing I'm focused on. They're focused on God. So I'm involved with those are the people I hang out with. That's who I hang with, okay? AA people that are involved in that stuff and the people in church, you know. So that's my whole milieu here. So every day I'm meeting with people for lunch, for dinner, whatever, coming up here, we'll have dinner afterwards, everything like that, are talking about that deal, that are my friends on that deal, and you know what? I talk to them and I speak to them, and you know what I focus on? I focus on that deal, I focus on that conversation, my life is focused on that, and no matter what's going on in my life, somehow I'm able to be steady, not because of me, but because of who I hang out with, because of what my conversations are. And I'm sitting there on this mountaintop, in North Carolina. I really do wish we had the slideshow. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And the whole deal is gorgeous. And so I'm sitting there for an hour looking at the mountain. And, you know, I go and I get something to eat, and I go outside, and I'm looking at the mountain. And I'm looking at my grandkids playing around the mountain. And about the fourth hour looking at the mountain, you know, let me tell you something. You could be in a million-dollar cabin on top of a mountain, look at the most beautiful scenery in the world, and if you got your brain with you, and you don't got a bunch of alcoholics with you or somebody where you can talk about God or focus on something like that, you can go absolutely batty. You know, it teaches you what's important. It teaches you that, you know, that it's all about this deal. It's all about us. It's all about you. It's all about my relationship with you and my relationship with him, which a lot has to do, my relationship with you has a lot to do with my relationship with him, and my relationship with him has a lot to do with how I interact with you. And that's where the power comes from. You know what I mean? And so I went around and I looked for an AA meeting. You know, we're very lucky in South Florida. Let me tell you something. Up in Blowing Rock, you know, there's like one AA meeting a week on Tuesdays. You know what I mean? So I find a church because I'm a church member, but that's only meeting on Sunday, you know. So I'm now where I usually go to 6 or 7 meetings, and I got 32 years, I go to 6 or 7 or 8 meetings a week, and I'm hanging out. Now I'm going down to 2 meetings, and I'm looking for anybody who's looking like they're smelling like alcohol, you know, because I can't because I'm not being able to handle. I mean, listen, I'm not going crazy. I'm loving my grandkids. I mean, that's what I love. I love to be with my grandparents. I hang out with my grandkids and my kids, and they're having a good time. But the truth of the matter is, this is my deal. This is my vacation. This is my thought life. This is where I'm at, you know, being with people, helping people, to be a maximum service to God, to be of service, to be a servant. That's who we are. That's who the leaders are. If you're a leader, you're a trusted servant. You're a servant. You serve people. If you're not serving people, you're not doing what God wants you. You're not performing. He gives you everything if you perform his works well. That's his works. Not for you to look at the mountain, but for you to serve people. That's what my job description is, serving other people. I've got to be serving. I got to be out there carrying this message. And so the bottom line, you know, so it's a wonderful deal, but, you know, this is where I need to be in this deal. This is my vacation. So I go right from there to the cruise ship, the 2 weeks in Alaska, and more mountains, bigger mountains, larger mountains. Believe me, whales, stuff like that. Great trip, wonderful trip, all the food you can eat, just what I need as an alcoholic. Just any another lobster, sir? Yeah, give me 5 more. So, of course, I'm hunting around. They have an AA meeting. We have 2 AA meetings that they had like a Bill Season meeting on the ship. I've done the cruise thing, and so I met a bunch of guys. There were about 3 guys with 30 years, and a guy with 29 years, a guy with like 6 years, and a guy with 6 months. And they the guys with 6 months and 1 year, they disappeared. They never saw them again. But so a bunch of guys with some time were hanging around, and so one day I walk into the AA meeting, and there's about 4 or 5 guys there. This is on the ship. And these are sober guys, you know, they've been around. You know, one guy's got 30 years, another guy's got 29 years, and they've been around for a while. And one guy's from North Carolina, another guy's from Pennsylvania, and there's a new guy. There's a guy there named Alan, never seen him before, and he was there, he's sitting there. I got pictures of him, you know, all on email together now. Alan's got 39 years, he was the one with 39 years. And you know, I was leading the meeting, the meeting started. It was very sort of casual. And somehow, some way, I know you're not going to believe this, I started talking about God. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how that happened, you know. They say, does anybody have a subject? And somehow the God thing came up, you know, and I don't know why. He's always, like, on my mind, you know. And somehow, I was talking about what I'm talking to you guys about, but sort of like in a shortened way, in a 5-minute way, you know, and how important he was to me. And I happened to tell the Al Kennedy story, the story I just told you guys, you know, that he was dying and, you know, and blah, 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 and he's dying, all that sort of stuff. And I said, I made this statement. I said, you know, I was with my sponsors when they died of cancer, and two of my sponsors, and you know, I watched Al Kennedy. I said, you know something? I said, you know, I'm a believer, and you know, I thank God for that. I said, I wouldn't want to be in a situation where I was dying, and I knew I was going to die, and trying to work out this third step. I wouldn't want. I mean, that's got to be. And I know people that have been in that situation. They say they've never seen more fear in a person's mind when you know the cars are gone, you know the Viagra's gone, the breast implants are gone, the sex is gone, and now it's just a matter of you're going to die, and you don't know where, and you don't know where you're going or what's going to happen. You've never. I said I'd never want to have that kind of fear. And then Al shared, and he says, "Well, I'm here because I only have 12 months to live." The guy with 39 years. He says, I only have 12 months to live. That's why I'm taking this cruise. And he says, I've got, what's that, mesothelioma, the thing they advertise? And he says, and I've been told I'll be dead within 12 months. And, you know, I'm here at AA, you know, and I'm a believer. And you know something? He agreed with me. He agreed with me. You know? You know, this is all fun and games right now for you guys, you know, because everybody thinks they're going home. They think they're going home. Everybody thinks they're going to work tomorrow. Everybody thinks they're, you know, we got a lot of people here. Some people aren't going to be going home. Some people aren't going to work. There's going to be some stuff happening in your life. Nobody's going to escape the punishment. Nobody's going to escape the stuff. Nobody's going to escape the cancer. Nobody's going to escape the suit. Nobody's going to escape the deals that's going on out there. Nobody has the power to escape that. This world is just way too powerful for that deal. I'm way too powerless, you know. And, you know, I can tell you this, I've lived a life here, both so before I came here and even for years after here, trying to negotiate my way and manage my life so I wouldn't get hurt without God. I mean, I know there's a God and everything like that, but really I'm in charge. I'll just manage my way out of this in such a way so it'll never hurt me. And I'll tell you something, all I dealt with all the time is 3 o'clock in the morning fear. There ain't no fear like 3 o'clock in the morning, worrying about stuff, you know what I mean? And I've lived a life where I've allowed him to manage it and stayed out of that deal, and it's a far more superior thing for me. And drinking doesn't come really up to the situation, because when you're focused on him and he's the one who's running your life, you know, you don't need the drink because it never gets that bad. So God bless you. Thank you very much.
Okay, I've asked someone to come up and do the checks.